Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Friday. It's September 9th, 48 degrees and hazy smoke in the sky. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Nate Larson. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Happy almost weekend, Park City. Yeah, much cooler temperatures to kick off your day. Really cooler airs arrive from the north, as well as some of the smoke, as you mentioned, some hazy conditions across the Wasatch back. Patchy smoke continuing today with otherwise sunny skies. 76 for the high this afternoon, so down from the 80s yesterday. We're all going to be seeing and feeling those changes outside. Minus the smoke, it's probably a welcome change with the temperatures. We're at 76 again on Saturday. Overnight lows back in the 40s. Plan on patchy smoke continuing tomorrow and likely on Sunday. We will start to see a shift from our north, if not northerly flow, to more of a southerly flow again into early next week. And so we should see the smoke get pushed back north of us as a lot of the fires are burning to the northwest. So we'll see improvement in air quality into early next week. We're also going to see a little bit of moisture trickle back into the forecast on Monday. There's only about a 20% chance of a shower or storm on Monday afternoon and evening as that flow becomes more southerly. So we should reach temperatures near 80. I failed to mention that Sunday, and then 78 on Monday. Plan on rain moving back into the picture Tuesday through about Thursday next week. So we've got showers that are likely. Highs will drop into the low 70s starting on Tuesday. We should just be in the upper 60s Wednesday, and Thursday a high of 70 with, again, a chance of showers and thunderstorms Tuesday through Thursday next week. So fall will officially feel like fall by next week as far as the moisture goes as well.
Okay. Have a great weekend. Thanks, Nate.
You too, Leslie.
Stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, we'll be checking in with Laura Smith from Mountain Trails. Later on, South Summit School District Superintendent Greg Mon with an update from yesterday's board meeting. Open snow meteorologist Sam Collentine has a look ahead at the winter forecast. And finally, Bruce Huff, volunteer coordinator for Park City's 9/11 National Day of Service, will have details about how you can participate in the program tomorrow. Right now, on the phone with us from Mountain Trails Foundation, it's Laura Smith. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning, Leslie. Happy Friday, Park City. We have got, I'll start with the work news, and then we'll get to the fun news with the Tour de Suds. We've got Scott House reporting that there will be a trail cat on the Sage and Dutchman Way out in the Heber area today. So if you can stay clear of that area, they would appreciate it. They've also got, looks like their last workday of the season, Wasatch Mountain State Park in Dutch Hollow tomorrow, which is Saturday, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., focusing on raking and finishing work on Sage Loop and Dutchman Way. They'll have the trail cat out. Oh, that was today, so be cautious today again in that area. Everything else is running well. We've got, Corey from South Summit Trails Foundation out in the Camas area says they've got a trail work day at Stevens Grove in Oakley tomorrow. That's Saturday, starting at 9 a.m. Bring gloves and a weed whacker if you've got one. Lots of tall grass to be knocking down that day. And then we've got a trails report for here from Rick, my trails manager at Mountain Trails. He says, good morning. We have trail impacts for the Tour de Suds. It is actually on Sunday, the 38th running of the Tour de Suds. Starts at City Park at 10 a.m., goes up, up Park Avenue and then up into Daly Canyon and then winds through Ontario Bypass, Mid-Mountain to the Tour de Suds Trail. Upper Team Big Bear and the Ontario Loop will all be impacted. Impacts will probably be a pretty narrow window of time from 10 a.m. to maybe noon. And then we will have the post-ride party down at City Park. That'll start around noon. And if you haven't signed up, we recommend you do it. We checked, I checked on that yesterday and we had, I think, like 40 spots left. So this is about to sell out. If you haven't signed up, recommend you do that right now. I doubt there's going to be day of registration like there has been in the past. So anyway, we hope to see the community out there partying and enjoying the trails. And it's a big thank you from Mountain Trails to the community. So hope you'll be out there.
Okay, Team Sugar will be back out there with the bake sale to support Trails. Yep, we'll be out there in the morning and then after the race as well.
Exactly. And we've got Level Crossing will be the brew sponsor, the Suds sponsor for those who are 21 and over. So, again, this is just a great community event, and we hope to see our bike riding community out there.
Okay, Laura, thanks.
Thanks, Leslie.
Well, taking a look at some local news now, Park City-based Pacific Group Resorts made the highest bid to buy the Northern Vermont ski resort, Jay Peak, this week. Pacific Group Resorts, or PGRI, has three partners, all from the Park City area. The president and CEO is Vern Greco, who served as the COO of another Park City-based resort company, Powder Corp. Prior to that, Greco served as president and general manager of the Park City Mountain Resort between 1998 and 2004, when it was owned by Powder. Doug Anderson is chairman of the board for PGRI. He was the man who took United Park City Mines from a public company to private ownership under Talisker, which developed Empire Pass. And Mark Fisher serves as executive vice president and CFO of PRGI and is a partner of Jans Limited and former CEO of Blakesley, a brand development firm. Fisher says he partnered with Anderson in 2012. Greco joined PGRI a year later. With the acquisition of Jay Peak, the three men now own six resorts across North America, from British Columbia to New Hampshire. Jay Peak Resort is a four-season resort in northern Vermont, located near the Canadian border. It's been in bankruptcy since its former owners were indicted in federal court after they misused tens of millions of dollars of foreign investor money. The fraud involved immigrant investors who provided some $200 million for the chance to receive a permanent green card from themselves and their families, plus a return on their investment through what is called the federal EB-5 program. Jay Peak had been on the market for 3 years before the court-appointed receivership put it up for auction last month. PGRI's $76 million bid was considered the best and highest bid. The more than 500 investors, foreign investors, will split the proceeds of the sale, but it doesn't come close to the estimated $260 million that was owed to them. According to news reports, PGRI offered to acquire Jay Peak in August for $58 million, but higher bids came in, pushing that bid up to $76 million. If approved by the court, Mark Fisher says that the closing will happen this fall prior to this year's ski and snowboard season. The opportunity to own a resort like Jay Peak, he says, does not come along very often.
We want to have properties in different places because you don't have a great snow year every year someplace, but it always snows, you know, someplace. So Jay, you know, was in a difficult situation with their receivership, and we were fortunate to find the opportunity, you know, when they decided to market it to the public, and they marketed it to a bunch of different ski resort operators, of which we were one. They also marketed it to a bunch of hotel operators because it's got a very large lodging component. It's got a big indoor water park. We just thought it was a good asset, and it fit our portfolio.
Even with six resorts now, Fisher says they don't plan to offer interchangeable passes like an Epic or Icon, saying they're just not at that scale.
Most of our resorts, people don't travel long distances to get to. You know, it's not like a Deer Valley or a Park City or a Steamboat or something like where people are flying from all over the country or all over the world to get to our properties. Ours are really drive-to destinations. And so, you know, we figured we'd let Vail and Altera fight over the, you know, the big destination properties, and we'd just be really good at drive-to destinations.
Fisher added that while there is some developable property around the resorts, they are primarily ski resort operators, and any development, he said, would just have to be gravy. 8:15 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, school is well underway in the South Summit School District, and in the studio with an update, Superintendent Greg Mon. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Any challenges getting school open this year?
No, it's been, you know, knock on wood. It's been a great start. You know, as everyone around the state's dealing with heat, so are we, although thankfully not to the same extreme that they are down in the valley and, you know, in the Salt Lake Valley. But no, school's had it's been off to a great start. It's been going well.
Yeah. Are you fully staffed?
Just about. We're always looking for paraprofessionals, substitutes, bus drivers. Right now we have an elementary counselor position open. So I'll just quickly put that plug out there.
Okay. Seems like bus drivers is just such a hard one to fill. How come? I mean, not just South Summit, but everywhere.
Yeah. So, you know, it's being a bus driver, I think, first of all, it's an interesting and a unique schedule that you're working, because you're really heavy during the morning commute time when you're picking kids up and taking them to school. And then there's a lull, and then it's really heavy again in the afternoon. And then there are a lot of activities that that are going on, whether it's, you know, field trips here or there, or you know, there are a lot of high school activities that take place in the afternoon and evening hours. And so it's just, I think some of it is the scheduling. And to be honest, you know, I think driving a big bus, it can be a little bit scary for some people.
Yeah. Let's see, the school board met last night. One of the items was to discuss a full-time school resource officer, an SRO, budgeted at a cost of between $49,000 and $60,000 a year. Was that budgeted for in this year's school budget?
It was not. So we've been meeting with the Summit County Sheriff and discussing the possibility of doing a cost share for a full-time SRO. It's something that we've never had in South Summit School District. I know, you know, Park City School District has Park City Police providing a lot of SRO service. Summit County does some in Park City. Summit County Sheriff's also helps kind of take care of South Summit and North Summit. But we've really wanted to push towards having a full-time deputy in our schools. And so we're just at maybe a little bit more than the infancy stages, because it's finally an action item that the board has taken up. And so there, while it wasn't in the budget, you know, certainly the budget came up in the conversation, and it's something that we're able to, we'd be able to cover that 50% cost share if the county council approves it, just by making some shifts here or there from other areas.
Yeah, salary is just part of it, though. I mean, who absorbs all of the benefits?
So those numbers that you quoted, that includes the benefits. That would be our 50% cost. So, you know, typically an SRO, you're not going to have a school resource officer who just came out of post training or out of an academy. They typically are going to be in that range of years 5 through 8, and so that's why there's such a big difference between those numbers, and so salary and benefits are actually double those numbers, but that would be the school district's 50% contribution.
Yeah, so is the thinking that just as one time only, and then South Summit needs to figure out how to pay for it in the future?
No, so the common practice is to do a multi-year MOU or a multi-year contract, you know, with an escape clause in there. It's very common to have a cost share between either the city police in the school district or the county sheriff's department and the school district. It's just something that we haven't had in South Summit School District.
Yeah. So would this officer then patrol all schools, or?
Yeah. The officer would be, you know, we have the three Camas Valley schools that are all relatively close together. And then we have the two schools in Silver Summit. And so the SRO really would kind of go between those five schools. I know our Silver Summit schools are, what, like a block or so away from the sheriff's department. But I think that we'd still have that expectation that the SRO's checking in with them as well. And they just, you know, it's a good opportunity to provide that security and that safety net, if you will, while also allowing officers or deputies and students and that to build relationships, you know, just to let them be part of the school and part of the everyday life.
Yeah, so this is a sheriff's deputy.
It would be, yeah.
Yeah, and so armed and...
Uh-huh, yeah.
Okay, when do you hope to bring that person on?
Well, so our board approved that last night, and it's all pending the county council's approval. So the sheriff will approach the council. I imagine I'll also approach them with him and make that request, hopefully in their next meeting. That's In fact, hopefully, you know, I haven't even had a chance to talk to the sheriff about it yet to let him know that it passed, because we finished kind of late last night. So he's going to be my next call after this to, you know, to let him know, hey, we've got to come up with our presentation.
Okay. School board is also looking at the Education Foundation restructure proposal. What does this entail?
So the South Summit Education Foundation Board is looking at making a change to basically third-party contract the executive director position, which is, you know, a lot of that is a fundraising arm of the foundation. And so that's really kind of the basic outline of what that restructure would look like.
Okay, but you do have an existing executive director?
We do, yep.
All right. So this comes back to the board next month, we'll know more then?
Actually, the board took action last night. I need to get some clarification and have some conversations with people. But it won't actually need to go back to the board.
Okay.
I'll be able to speak more to it, you know, after I'm able to have a few conversations with people today.
Okay. School board also reviewed the first reading of the licensed educator evaluation policy, which basically updates school policy to reflect current state code.
Correct.
What is it that the state requires of teacher evaluations?
There's a period of time where career status employees, so non-provisional teachers, you were able to do a formal evaluation on them once every 3 years. That changed, and so our policy needed to be updated to reflect that. Now it's that all licensed employees are evaluated formally every year. And so it's bringing our policy and procedures up to state board rule and state code. And you'll see that's a lot of times in districts when you see policy updates, that's the basis for the policy update, is because legislatively something was changed or board rules changed. So,
okay. Who does those evaluations?
On teachers, it's the school administration, principals and assistant principals. And I take care of the evaluations on the principals.
Okay. Let's see. What's the latest with master planning?
Master planning. So we have had so many projects going on, but it's really nice. We're finally getting to the end of some of our projects. We're at the tail end of the Silver Summit Elementary project. Just as we find little odds and ends that need to be addressed, we're finishing up with some of those punch list type items. Our high school, South Summit High School, we had to replace a lot of our fire suppression system that had not been, we budgeted for it before this budget cycle started, but it kind of came on quick towards the end of last year, and when they detected some leaks in pipes, so we had to replace a lot of the fire suppression system in the high school. And so we've finished up with that, but with some of the new wiring and that, we're working out some bugs. As far as master planning around building the board, we're gonna be working with the EPA some more on looking at our Silver Creek property and actually getting to a point to where we can take some sort of a design to the EPA so that they know where they need to test and really focus and hone in on where to test. So we've got that. Lots of big projects going on, lots of capital projects.
What's the Silver Creek project entail?
Well, we have some property over in Silver Creek that is there if we have the need to build a school. And I do think that that in the future we'll need to expand, have bigger buildings than what we currently have. We have a little bit of room to grow still.
At the Silver Summit Academy.
At the Silver Summit Academy and Silver Summit Elementary, yeah. So we have some time, but I don't want to let time pass by so smoothly and so easily that it becomes something we have to react to. I really want to be more proactive around that.
Yeah, but what about the need for a new high school and elementary in the Camas Valley?
So that's one of the things we're certainly looking at. You know, our buildings continue to age, and so we're looking at that cost. You know, the cost benefit analysis, for lack of a better term, of you know, it's costing X amount to maintain versus X amount to rebuild. You know, and so. We have property that we would be able to build schools on, but right now there are several different ideas floating out there about how to go about doing that. You know, would we use some existing property right there in the area of the where the schools sit now versus moving them to some of the properties outside, you know, like in Francis or Oakley or whatnot.
Okay. Finally, you've put out a request for a proposal for the Recreation Center. This is a school district facility. But to do what? Are you looking for more programs, more space?
Really, what we're wanting to do is just to, it's kind of an all-encompassing study of, you know, to include salary study, offerings, you know, are we offering what the community needs or wants, or you know, or do we need to consider, you know, making changes to it, or you know, it's an opportunity for us to assess how we're doing with the rec center.
So what's the timeline on that? When do you have, well, will you have some results?
So the RFP was just awarded, and there is a period of time that anyone that put in for the RFP has to, you know, make some sort of appeal or request. And so, but the award was just granted, and so I imagine that you know, if all things go smoothly, that they'll start in the next 4 weeks or so, I would hope.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Well, I'll just say I am so glad school's back in. I love getting into classrooms.
Okay, Greg, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks.
Greg Mon is the superintendent of schools for the South Summit School District. The National Weather Service released its 2022-23 winter forecast, and one of the meteorologists for the Open Snow website, Sam Collentine, prepared a report about what we can expect this winter. Joining me now on the phone is Sam Collentine. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so first off, just tell us what open snow is. I know KPCW is a paid member of this weather forecasting service.
Yeah, open snow was started about 10 years ago. And what we do, we're a weather service provider that focuses really on snow forecasts for skiers and snowboarders. So we have forecasts throughout the West, forecasters, local forecasters that write daily snows every day throughout the winter. But we also have the latest snow reports, webcams, 5 to 10 day snow forecasts. So really everything you need as a skier, snowboarder, and especially a powder chaser throughout the West and around the world.
Yeah. So you have these meteorologists then just kind of around just different areas of the country searching for powder,
yeah,
huh?
Focus. Yes. So they're focused primarily in the Western United States, but we also have forecasters in New England and the upper Midwest of the United States. And so what we do is we look at the model data every morning, take what we've seen in the past and apply that to how the storm is performing currently. And we provide forecasts anywhere from, you know, the next five to 10 days. And we also have a longer range outlook as well. And so these are trained forecasters and meteorologists that, again, focus essentially on snow forecasts and helping you find the deepest powder.
All right. I understand you live in Aspen, so that's your reporting area there?
Yep. I live here in the Roaring Fork Valley, right just outside of Aspen. And yeah, I focus on Colorado specifically.
All right. So there's also another meteorologist here in Utah that does the same.
Yep. Evan Thayer lives in Sandy, just at the base of Little Cottonwood there. And yeah, he writes the Utah Daily Snow.
All right. Well, it sounds like you were assigned, though, with interpreting the forecast for the upcoming winter from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, as we know it.
Yes. Yeah, so every summer this time of year, We look at what El Nino is doing, what La Nina is doing, and what NOAA is putting out there. So for a little more background on that, El Nino or La Nina is just looking at the sea surface temperatures in the equatorial East Central Pacific. And so right now, we're in a La Nina phase, which means it's cooler than average, those oceans' surface temperatures. When it's warmer than average, that's an El Nino. And then we also have a neutral phase where nothing's really happening. But right now, what's really interesting is we are in a pretty strong La Nina for the summer. Usually it kind of goes back to a neutral phase in the summer months and then really ramps up in the winter months. But what's really interesting is that it's not only going to be, looks like, the third La Nina winter in a row, but it's really interesting how strong the La Nina is right now. So it's just really interesting to see, and it gives us kind of a confident signal that we're at least going to have a somewhat strong winter throughout the Western United States. Again, these are looking out months in advance, but when we look back at previous winters, it's a pretty decent signal for especially the Pacific Northwest, Western Canada. Gets a little bit weaker of a signal when we get down to the Central Rockies. It's interesting because we're, you know, again, looking at that triple dip La Nina is what we're calling it, and plus such a strong La Nina this time of year.
Yeah. So given that at least the Utah, northern Utah area has seen record high temperatures, you know, unlike other summers, is that a bad thing as we kind of go into this winter so hot and dry?
No, there's not really any correlation between the frankly, the insane temperatures that that the Salt Lake City airport recorded over the last week. There really isn't any correlation between this and what we're going to see later in the winter months.
All right. And then, there is a big warning on the forecast. I mean, we know that weather forecasts are accurate for about 3 days. So I guess it's like, why do you even bother to look long range? I mean, is it helpful?
I think it's helpful to give skiers and snowboarders that maybe only have, you know, a 1 week a year where they're planning out where they can go skiing for that extended trip. The biggest thing that we can do right now is see the current conditions with El Nino and La Nina and what NOAA is helping us put out there and apply that, look at those conditions and look back at previous winters. And so what we've seen, and what's interesting again for this winter, is when there's been this strong of La Nina in the summer months, six out of those 7 winters since 1950, it's correlated to a very strong La Nina. And like I said, it's mixed signals for a place like Utah, but it's a pretty great signal for if you want to take a trip to the Pacific Northwest, Western Canada. So again, it just gives people that maybe have just that 1 week a year to plan for their trip for the winter.
All right. So looking at the charts and the graphs that were put out and the photos, what does the forecast say in terms of the temperatures for December, January, and February? It looks like maybe we're leaning above normal temperatures.
Yeah, the extended outlook that NOAA put out for December, January, February, it has the desert southwest, essentially Arizona, New Mexico, southern Utah, getting up into northern central Utah, and much of California, essentially in that above average area. The middle of the country, northern Utah is right on the edge, is kind of like equal chances of not really below or above average, and then maybe a slightly cooler winter up in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, so when we talk about kind of above normal or below normal, I mean, what is normal reference to? It's not last year. I mean, it's figured out over a span of years?
Yeah, so every 10 years, NOAA updates that. So right now, we're looking at the past 30, compared to the past 30 years, from the 1990 to 2020 time frame. And so when we're looking at climate normals or climate averages, we're always looking at the previous 30-day window, or 30-year window that NOAA puts out. The hardest thing that we're seeing nowadays is, with climate change happening, we are seeing warmer temperatures, and so when you look at even the past 10 or 15 years, you're really seeing a ramp up in the amount of record temperatures and warmer temperatures during the winter months throughout much of the West. It's been really interesting. So that really throws a wrench in those 30-year climate averages.
Yeah, I was going to say so. I mean, it'd be interesting to see what normal is compared to, right, I don't know, 50 years, 60 years ago, before we saw such changes in climate change. But what about the seasonal precipitation outlook? What does that say there for Utah?
It, again, Utah's right on the edge. Mm-hmm. I'd say Utah's right in that equal chances area. Not really above, not really below. But again, when we look back at those previous La Nina winters, there's been a couple of those strong La Nina winters that there's been a couple winters where Utah's been 10 to 30% above average. There's been some that they're right at average, and some that they're right below average. So again, there really isn't a clear signal for Utah. There's again a strong signal for probably above average precipitation in the Pacific Northwest, and maybe a slightly below average for areas south of Utah.
Okay, so are Utah and Northern Utah Park City area and Aspen in similar zones? Do we see similar weather? It seems like we kind of missed the snowstorm, and then it dips down into the Aspen area, and you guys do get the snow.
Yeah, it's really interesting. We have a similar storm track. Mm-hmm. What's interesting is that we're always looking at the big thing that we're looking at from a snow forecast perspective is the amount of energy, temperature, moisture in the atmosphere. But what's really important is the wind direction. So Little Cottonwood to the west of Park City really gobbles up a lot of that snowfall from the primarily out of the west and northwest. That's also does really well for Colorado, is west and northwest, especially in central and northern Colorado. Areas to the south of Park City and just like southern Colorado do really well with a southwest wind direction. And so Park City is kind of in that weird area where it takes a really specific wind direction and kind of storm track for them to do really well, which they have, which is awesome when they do see those 10 to 20 inch jumps to kind of rival against places like Alta and Snowbird. But it takes a really specific wind direction and storm track.
Right. All right. Any other observations about the upcoming winter, Sam?
I'll just say a caveat, just like, the NFL season started last night. There's Super Bowl odds out there for teams to what their Super Bowl odds to win. Just like that, these long range forecasts, it's really who knows. So that's always a huge caveat. I think paying attention to the 5 to 10 day snow forecast and maybe a little bit out beyond that is the best thing you can do for planning powder days and just your kind of winter adventures.
Yeah, but we love to talk about weather, so we do.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Sam, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Sam Collentine, again, a meteorologist for Open Snow. You can find out more by going to that Open Snow forecast on the web. Well, a Park City mom has moved into a new Habitat for Humanity home in Silver Creek Village. KPCW's Carolyn Murray has more about that.
A mother and son are the newest Summit County Habitat for Humanity homeowners. They moved into their new home last month in time for the start of school. Summit and Wasatch County Habitat for Humanity Executive Director Shelley Barris said this home marks the first time Summit and Wasatch County Habitat has added energy-saving systems like additional insulation, energy-efficient ventilation, and a solar-ready roof and garage.
On the exterior of the home, we did a 2-inch foam insulation board underneath the siding that went on. So that was a new process for us. And we also did insulation under the slab and in the foundation.
Barris said the Silver Creek project would ultimately contain 26 Habitat for Humanity homes. Home recipients must take a personal finance course, qualify for a mortgage, and devote at least 200 hours of sweat equity to the building process.
We go through a basic kind of mortgage underwriting to make sure that they are within the income guidelines in our requirements, and then also per the deed restriction in that project. So we go through typical lender mortgage underwriting to make sure they can afford the home, looking at credit and debt loads and all of those things.
Barris said Habitat calculates 30% to 80% of AMI, average median income, when qualifying people for a home. She said few affordable housing programs provide mortgage opportunities for families earning less than 50% of AMI. Under Habitat's guidelines, mortgage payments can't exceed 30% of income.
For this homeowner, we're the mortgage lender, and we collect those payments and we service that mortgage throughout her term.
The Village Development Group donated the land to Habitat several years ago. Barris said donations and partnering with suppliers and contractors helped to make the first two homes possible. She expects that to continue for the next couple dozen townhomes planned for the neighborhood. Barris hopes to work with Wasatch Cities and the county to build more dense projects like the one at Silver Creek. Habitat is building 14 townhomes this year, a fourplex and a 10-plex on two separate lots. Barris encourages those interested in applying for a Habitat home to take a financial education class. A woman's course starts September 28th, running Wednesday evenings for 5 weeks. A link to more information about the program is in the web version of this report. Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
The Park City 9/11 National Day of Service Group hopes to plant 10,000 trees in Park City by the year 2030, basically one tree per projected resident. On the phone with details, I have one of the organizers of the event, Bruce Huff, to tell you how you can help. Good morning, Bruce. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Leslie. Great to be with you this morning.
Yeah, so
another beautiful day in Park City.
Yeah, so who's putting on this effort? I mean, is there a Park City 9/11 National Day of Service organization?
Yeah, so here's what's sort of happened. There's nationally, there's an organization called the 9/11 National Day of Service, and they have sort of reached out to communities all over the United States to basically say, hey, look, we had a horrific situation happen on 9/11, but the really important part to take away from that was what people did for each other in the aftermath. The service that was given, the service that was rendered. And so they created this National Day of Service. And so, yes, they reached out to communities and said, look, let's celebrate serving one another on this day as a way of commemorating that occasion. And we combined with we were looking for a good project, a service project, and Park City has this wonderful initiative called Planting Park City, which is basically the idea of, as you mentioned in your introduction, planting 10,000 trees by the year 2030. And the mayor, Nan Worrell, did a proclamation from a resolution at the last city council meeting declaring this Saturday, September 10th, as Planting Park City Day. And we have acquired 150 trees. They're basically all sitting out there on Gilmore Way at near the dog park and up that road there, getting ready for tomorrow. One of my colleagues, Craig Nielsen, is out there right now with members of city staff, kind of making sure the trees are in the proper location. And so we're inviting our community to come out and join us. And when I say us, I mean, let's work together as a community to serve our community and serve each other by planting these trees.
Yeah, so where does all the funding come for the tree? I mean, to plant, you know, for the trees come from?
Yeah, so this is an interesting thing. So this year, because we kind of got a little bit of a late start, we didn't get any of the usual, grants that sometimes were available for planting trees, which I think will be the focus of many of our people at the city. You have some wonderful people there who have the sustainability responsibility for the community here, Celia and Heinrich and Logan and that team who are engaged in that effort. So this year, the city is matching what we as volunteers are raising. And so we're raising about $12,500. That'll get not only the trees, but some of the other materials such as protecting them from the little fencing around them to protect them from deers eating them. Plastic tubing and some bladders so that we can make sure those trees are nourished with water. And so all those are kind of coming together. That's what the funding goes for. And then what we really need are volunteers to show up and help us dig the holes and make sure that they're properly planted. We'll have a little demonstration there. We have captains who will work with people so that there's good supervision and if there's any questions. And we really just ask people to come at 9 o'clock tomorrow. We're actually, there's another activity happening there in Round Valley with a trail run, which is exciting. Every year we have those kinds of activities. And so we're going to be parking at the Utah Film Studio right across the street and then walking across with the semaphore and the park and the crosswalk there over to the dog park. And there'll be a little pop-up there where you can sign in and get assigned where to go. It'll all be within walking distance pretty much of that location. You know, we bring gloves, a shovel especially. Some people may want to also bring a little pickaxe or a sledgehammer, or if you have one of those post drivers, that would be great too to help put the fencing around these trees. Pliers, wire cutters, some of those kinds of things. Bring a water bottle, but we'll have water there to refill. If we get enough volunteers, as we think and we hope we will, this will actually go pretty rapidly. We only have, we only have 150 trees. And if we can get the number of volunteers we need, we could be done in less than 2 hours so that you can get back to your Saturday and your activity. And we know the high school has been promoting this with high school students. We're excited about having our young people show up for this kind of an event. It's homecoming weekend, though, and so you know how, and Leslie, I don't know if you remember, but when I was a kid, you know, homecoming was, you know, dinner and a dance. Now it's an all-day affair, you know, with these kids. So I'm just suggesting, hey, bring your date, plant a tree, and 30 years from now, you can come back and say, hey, I planted that tree with that girl I took to the homecoming dance.
So at this point, how many volunteers do you have, and how many would you like?
We'd like 300 volunteers. I'd say that we're probably over 100 confirmed, and that's growing, you know, every day. One of the way, and here's the good part, it's really easy to sign up to participate. You know, the city always likes to get a waiver signed because they don't want anybody to, you know, have any problems if there's an injury or something. So there are waivers required, but you can get those online or at the sign-in desk. If you go online, the best way to do this is go to the site. It's called justserve.org, just the way it sounds, justserve.org. And when that site comes up, type in the area code, like 84060, and then just to make it even easier, it'll kind of say, you know, within what mileage. Put 5 miles in. And if you do that, you'll see Planting Park City, a square with that information on it. Just click that square. It'll give you all the information about what time and where and parking and what to bring. And you can download a waiver form right there, and you can fill it out, and it'll make it easier when you sign in to just bring it with you and drop it off. And, yeah. And by the way, that site, justserve.org, is a terrific site for any kind of volunteer work because you'll find, you know, the CCPC on there. You'll find other local organizations who are always looking for volunteers. So if you haven't found that site yet, if you're looking for volunteer opportunities, justserve.org is an awesome place to go. And that's where we are. And it's easy to get the information, easy to get the waiver, and easy to come out tomorrow morning. Bring your family. I have some families. We have some Boy Scouts coming. We've got, scouting organizations. We've contacted many service clubs, including the, you know, Rotarians and the CTC and other organizations to come out. It's really a chance to rub shoulders with your neighbors, spend time together, do some good, not just with each other, but for our community. This idea of planting trees and providing, you know, that extra oxygen in the air, but also the coverage that allows us to get through hot days like we've had is really going to be an important thing for our future and our community.
Yeah. What kind of trees are you planting out there? Any idea?
You know, we've got, I know that Celia at the city loves the chokecherry. So we're getting some chokecherry trees. We'll be, I'm sure there'll be some aspens. There's a variety of trees that have been sort of vetted by the local arborists and making sure that we have the right ones in the right place. And I'm not an expert on trees, though there is a birch tree that I would love to put in my yard that I've seen. I don't see too many birches up here, but I have it in my yard as a kid. And I want to find a birch tree for my own yard. And I know that in another month or so, there's going to be a tree giveaway for people to come plant trees in your yard. So keep tuned for that one, too.
Okay. Well, as we all know, planting a tree is one thing. Watering them is another to keep it alive. So
absolutely.
How do we ensure that those are going to stay alive? I remember the project we did out on 224 probably 25 years ago, and many of them died.
So my wife's biggest peeve, I'm serious, we'll drive down, she goes, I can't stand seeing these dead trees. It's because they're not getting water. And so this has been one of the things that we've emphasized. So what I mentioned, some of the supplies we're going to have, we're putting plastic tubing in and bladders. And so what will happen is we'll have water brigades, again, volunteers who will come along with the city water truck and do some of those kinds of things, that we will, especially in the infancy of these trees, make sure that they're getting sufficient water. We know there's two good times to plant trees, in the fall and in the spring, and we're attempting to do both those planting seasons as we move forward over the next many years to get to those 10,000 trees. But one of our greatest concerns is exactly your point, Leslie, and that is, let's make sure that we have good survivability on these trees. And so that does mean we need water there. So that is part of this project, no question.
Okay. Again, the first 150 of what hopes to be 10,000 trees by 2030. Anything else you wanted to add, Bruce?
You know, again, this is not going to take a lot of your day, but we would love to see you. We're going to have a member of the city council. Mayor Nan won't be able to be there because she'll be out of town, but they'll be sort of welcoming the community to this effort with the proclamation that was passed. This is just a great opportunity to do good and to be with your neighbors and to really enjoy something that will be a legacy project for our community. And it's all about being together as a community and working together. And in this day and age, any chance we can to be with our neighbors and show and express love and appreciation for serving each other, I think is the right thing to be thinking about and the right thing to be doing.
Okay. Bruce Huff, again, is the volunteer coordinator for Park City's 9/11 National Day of Service. They'll be meeting out at the Utah Film Studio at 9 o'clock. Bring, again, shovels, gloves, water bottle, and some sunscreen, I'm guessing. Bruce, appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. Let's plant Park City.
Again, to register, you can go online to justserve.org and then type in 84060. Well, Deer Valley owner Alterra Mountain Company announced that it's acquiring Park City-based rental and delivery service Ski Butlers. KPCW's Parker Malatesta reports.
Ski Butlers was founded in 2004 and calls Prospector in Park City home. Mike Cremino is the company's chief revenue officer.
Ski Butlers will remain a standalone business while maintaining its current staff and leadership. The acquisition will provide resort guests additional access to exceptional service and premier ski equipment at several mountain destinations.
The company employs 250 people in the winter and 12 during the summer. In a statement, Alterra CEO Jared Smith called the acquisition a, quote, natural addition, and said Ski Butlers has set the standard for guest satisfaction in the ski industry. Ski Butlers operates at Alterra destinations including Deer Valley, Steamboat, and Palisades Tahoe. It also offers services in other popular destinations like Jackson Hole, Aspen, Whistler, and Sun Valley, in addition to operating throughout France and Italy. A press release says the company plans to expand in North America, starting with Mammoth Mountain in California this winter. Ski Butler's founder and CEO, Bryn Carey, said the Alterra acquisition will help the company scale to reach as many skiers and riders as possible. The company will continue to be based in Prospector. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.